Welcome to the Fancy Jam podcast. My name's Jack from Fancy Jam Pictures. Every other week, I'll be talking to some of the best and most ambitious film creatives out there. This week, I have an interview with a friend of mine, Miriam Raja, who's a fantastic director of some short films. She's also studying at the National Film and TV School in an MA in directing. It's a great interview. We touch on the types of stories that Miriam likes to tell, how she finds the people that she works with, how she got started in film production, and any advice she has for those that are starting out or those that want to apply to the NFTS. I do hope you enjoy the interview. Okay, cool. I have with me today Miriam Raja, who is a director of a few short films, and she's currently studying at the National Film and TV School in directing. Hi, Miriam. Thanks so much for joining me.
Hiya, thanks for having me.
Fab. So do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about how you got started in filmmaking and film directing?
Yeah, so I'm based in Slough, which if you know Slough, there isn't much going on. But one summer, I was 14 years old and I just Googled like activities Slough, and there was like a couple of summer courses happening. So I found out one of them was like a filmmaking course, and never having really done any filming or, you know, I had no experience in that, but I just signed up for it. So my first introduction to it was through a youth filmmaking course, which was run by a local production company. That production company is Resource Productions, whom I'm still in touch with. So it's been 10 years and they've helped, actually since that day, they've helped me on almost every short I've done. So yeah, I mean, it was incredibly lucky in that sense, but once I'd done the course and made my first short, I then went away and started making more and more short films with friends. So I got hold of a mini DV camera and then just would shoot stuff around school or like after school. And I think we used to just put them on YouTube, really. So yes, I mean, I did do media studies for A-level and then carried on by applying to the film production course at the Arts University Bournemouth, which I think is now also called Bournemouth Film School. So I did 4 years of film production and ended up specializing in directing.
Great. And how do you think you find the stories you want to tell, and what sort of stories attract you, do you think, as a director?
I write everything I direct. At the beginning, actually, when I first started making films, they were horror films, because I think it's an easy genre to understand the tropes of and what works and what doesn't. I guess it's like easy to try and mimic. And as I grew up, I realized the stories I wanted to tell actually came very much from my culture and within my own home. So I started off by telling stories which are very much contained within a domestic interior, you know, with female characters as the protagonist, and looking at issues like identity or feeling, you know, displaced or diasporas. So those are kind of the recurrent themes I've noticed in the past, and more I feel like there are bigger subjects I want to try and push. So, you know, I'm now looking into like exploring more taboo subjects, which I think are not really being spoken about. So my last film at the NFTS was about FGM. My next one is going to be about honor and womanhood. So yeah, I think gradually I began to understand what my interest was in and sort of hone in on that a bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. From watching some of your shorts online, you get a sense that your films are very much, as you mentioned, driven by character, and they feel very personal, often regarding a character feeling out of place with a certain element of their culture. Mm. I was wondering what is it that kind of draws you to those stories, and you kind of touched that on a little bit, but if there's anything you think that you know draws you to telling those stories above, you know, going for something a bit more genre like the horror film DV camera roots that you started making?
Yeah, I think a lot of it stems from wanting to explore a specific type of feeling, and sometimes my characters are quite helpless, so they'll be in a helpless situation where, you know, it's not very plot driven, and traditionally you might say that they are passive characters, but I think because a character is trapped, it doesn't mean they're passive. So I'm really interested in the feeling of, it's actually an Urdu word, which is not really translatable in English, which is gutan, and that it's hard to translate, but it kind of means suffocation. So I became really interested in exploring that and getting that feeling across, but through the short films, making that, affecting an audience in that way. So I'm not saying I'm always like suffocating myself and I want an audience to feel that way as well, but I think that's why my films are not so heavily plot driven, or I wouldn't like stick by, you know, the basic rules of writing in that sense. It becomes more of an experience, I think, where you have to completely experience what the character is experiencing. So yeah, they're very much our stories, which stem from characters in certain situations rather than a whole wide world around them.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that you write all of your scripts, and I was wondering if I could talk a little bit about your process as a director, and how you separate sort of the responsibility as a writer and your role as a director, and what the sort of first things you do as a director when you approach the script.
Most of the times I will start with an image. So there'll be one particular image that plays in my mind over and over, and, you know, it'll stick in there for months and months, and then I'll realize I need to write something based on that. And I think there's usually a danger where some directors will like want to keep their writer hat on and not take it off till just before the shoot. I try and write, I actually write quite plainly, so scripts are not very heavily detailed. And I think that can also be a flaw in a director, where you think you know exactly how you're going to shoot it, so you can like skip out details, but it's really important for the crew to know what you want to do. I'll write a script and I kind of cheat, where I write in a way where scenes can be bookended and I know I can then shift them in the edit. So I end up usually rewriting in the edit with the editor and throwing the script out once you've shot it, throwing it out completely. And usually, you know, the editor will do something completely different and use a scene from the middle as the opening scene or whatever, which I always find is so much more exciting. And that's what I did with, yeah, quite a few of my shorts actually, and it made them even better. But it's allowing yourself that flexibility from the writing process. You just need to know exactly what your scene is about. Then you know where it might fit in the story as a whole. And on set as well, I'm really open to letting the actors come up with their own lines or shifting lines, or, you know, trying something completely different. So to me, the script is always just, it's not to say the script is not important, but I use it more as a guide than, or like the skeleton, and then we'll flesh on set and finally, you know, reflesh it maybe in the edit.
Yeah, absolutely. To build on that idea, and you talked about having a very fruitful working process with your editor, how do you build your team and how do you choose which HODs you want to work with, and how do you ensure kind of as a director you have a fruitful and kind of collaborative working relationship with them?
So through meeting Resource Productions, there was another group. There was basically a group of us as young filmmakers, and we made films together. And then once I went to the Arts University Bournemouth, I met people there, and they, you know, you see who you get on with, and you kind of stick with the team. So I think that's the beauty of sort of community groups like these, or courses like this, where you have immediate open access to other creatives. And at the NFTS, for example, there's only 8 people in each course. So you know already everyone's incredibly talented. It just becomes about who you get on with and who kind of wants to tell the same stories as you. I do tend to prefer to work with people I've worked with before. And I do think it's quite rare to find, you know, those sort of gems that you want to keep around you. But what happens is you just, you know, the level of communication you have between you, the two of you, it just becomes so much more to the point, and they know exactly what you're trying to say without you having to say it. So I do definitely think finding a really good team, and yeah, I would say it's a team, not a crew. Like it's they are there just as important as you are. But in terms of finding them, I would just say it's about making sure you spend a lot of time with someone and ask questions beyond the project you're making. So really finding out what their taste might be, what kind of makes them go. And it's always interesting to see what someone might find speaks to them in a script. Because if my script is very much so, they're quite personal. So they'll be about a culture I know, but not necessarily someone else. But if they can still find something that, you know, gets them going, then I think that's a good sign.
Yeah, absolutely. To talk a little bit about script again, then, do you think you'd ever in the future work on a project that's another screenwriter had written, or do you think because the stories you're attracted to are so personal and kind of mean something to you that you always want to write your own projects?
So while being at the NFTS, because there's an amazing screenwriting course here, I did end up working with a screenwriter on one of the projects I've done here. So, but again, I couldn't fully let it go and we ended up co-writing.
Mm.
But I found it such an amazing process to have someone else bounce with you from the very beginning. I would say I think it's an important skill for a director to have, to be able to direct another script or something written by someone else, because
yeah,
you still kind of add what you do bring something to it. It's not, you don't lose ownership, I think. So I wouldn't steer clear of other people's scripts because of fear of losing ownership or not having my vision on it, blah blah blah, not having my stamp. I don't think that's the right way to look at it. But yeah, if someone out there will write a story that I feel I can connect to, I would definitely do it. Otherwise, I'd find it really difficult, I think, to go ahead and direct something that I don't think I could relate to or could do any justice.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of your stories deal with certain elements of Asian culture. Do you think there is a kind of underrepresentation of female Asian directors in the film industry? And why do you think that is?
So I think that, you know, there's definitely been like a wave of British Asian films as a genre. And that, I mean, when you think of that, you think Bender Like Beckham or Monsoon Wedding, or maybe like the first one was Beautiful Laundrette. But since then, it's been very much like these. They're not really, again, they're not really films I think I would want to watch. I think it's getting better. I think it's definitely getting better. But still, I, for example, have an issue with elderly Asian characters on TV that speak in accented English, because I just don't think that's authentic. But you can see from that it's because it's still being marketed to a very Western audience. There is a shift and it's quite slow. And I have, you know, I mean, there's no escaping sort of this realization of yourself as a diverse filmmaker and what that means. And I think it's really easy for to get burdened by it, to think that you have to be the voice and to think that you have to sort of champion diversity and representation. And I think actually that can be quite problematic for a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just encourage anyone out there not to get too bogged down by it, really. I don't mean you shouldn't be voicing it, but I also don't mean, because I do have friends who feel like maybe because of diversity, they didn't get to a point they should have been. And I think that's very unhealthy, because at the same time, you could say you only got to where you are because of diversity.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's very important for filmmakers to be, to look at it in a healthier way than just, you know, let that become what defines them, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think there's some sort of pigeonholing then in sort of the types of stories that the kind of diverse filmmakers are telling and feel like they can tell?
Yeah, I think it's very, very easy to get pigeonholed. And I think especially at this level where you're like going out pitching for funding and like you come up in front of someone with a body of work that's very Asian, and then suddenly you pitch for like a story that's, you know, maybe let's say like a fantasy film, and the funders being like, well, that doesn't, you know, we thought you were about this. Why do you want to make this? So I'm not saying that happens, but, you know, it's easy for you to end up accidentally building a niche and pigeonholing yourself, really. I haven't found that to be the case, and I was quite lucky to get funding from Creative England for an iShorts film, which featured a white male protagonist and was English, which, you know, was really nice because I wasn't questioned.
Mm-hmm.
On whether I was like steering away from the kind of films I should be making or whatever. So I do have hope. I think it will change. And I think there are stories out there that need to be told. And I'm sure there's plenty of filmmakers that are coming up, but it's about not, you know, losing hope, but also not letting it become the biggest defining thing about yourself.
Do you think there are any particular obstacles you've faced sort of in your filmmaking career so far, or anything you've kind of learnt from the films that you've made in the past that you would that you're going to take forward in your future projects?
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, also I haven't had much of a career just yet, so I think it will all begin as soon as I graduate. I mean, the being in the bubble of student life is very, very nice. I would probably say it's the most important thing I've learned is being confident. I mean that because also I remember, you know, letting myself get undermined because I was young and a girl and a student, or, you know, all sorts of things like that. So all these years, and the more films I make, the more I learn that it's just super important to be confident. And I don't know if that actually answered your question, actually.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, that's good. Perhaps we roll on to that a little bit. Do you have any advice you would give to kind of first-time filmmakers, people that maybe were in your shoes 3 or 4 years ago that are kind of going for their first funded short film? What would you say to them, or what would you say to yourself in that position?
I honestly think the best thing to do is to, and this is obviously what everyone always says, but it's to keep making films. And if I could do it with like a broken mini DV camera, you know, people can do it with an iPhone. The second thing would be to really think about what you have to say about the world, to really be clear about what, you know, what are your small obsessions. It could be like you're really into fabrics, which I am, and like I'm really into fabrics and domestic interiors and food, and that will somehow inform the way I stylize my films. So, you know what your small obsessions are in terms of like the texture of a film, and just know what you want to say about the world. If you are a director or writer, know what you have to say about the world and why you want to be saying it, because everyone has a completely distinctive voice, but you need to be able to know what that is. And finally, my last point would be proactive. Like, yeah, absolutely, just be proactive. There are so many websites and like Facebook groups and events, and it's just about, and it takes time, but it's like I used to, you know, try and go to all these film festivals and submit my films to absolutely everything I could back when I was free, and go to like networking events and just meet with people and keep contact and like email in and stuff. So it's definitely about being proactive. And also with the internet, it's just so much easier now. I'm saying that as if I come from an age of no internet, but
it's true. Everything's out there on the internet. You know, it is possible to find these opportunities and the film festivals and networking, and yeah, everything's just a Google away.
Yeah, it is. It literally is. I mean, it's a lot of Googling, but there's like newsletters and stuff, and there are more and more schemes out there, I think, now. So it's about applying to everything, and you will like get rejected, what, like 60% of the time, maybe 70%, but it doesn't, you know, once you get one thing, it'll snowball. So it's about not giving up.
That's it. Persistence, the most important skill for any filmmaker to have. I want to talk a little bit about the NFTS. How did you kind of get to know about the school, and how did you become involved and end up studying on the directing course?
Yeah, it's quite an unusual story, I guess. But my graduation film from Bournemouth, which is Tazib. So after I graduated from Bournemouth, I just sort of went freelance, aka sadly unemployed, for about a year. And I was also then, luckily, I got the funding to make an iShorts. So I was just sort of focusing on that. So a year later, Tazib was nominated for a RTS award. So we'd won the regional, went on to the national, and it was nominated for the undergrad, which we ended up winning. And the director of the NFTS, John Wardle, happened to be there, and the NFTS won the postgrad award. And he basically just asked me whether I had been thinking about applying to the school, and kindly invited me to come onto the course. So thank you so much. I think I would definitely have applied a year later anyway. So it's just incredibly lucky that it happened that way. And I do think it's probably one of the best things that's happened. I mean, I've learned an incredible, incredible amount already so far. And I'm gearing up to shoot my grad film in 2 months. And it feels like it's gone too quickly. I think as a director, there's never enough learning, and just the people I've met here, it's been absolutely invaluable. Yeah.
Is there any advice you'd give to directors who are kind of applying for the course at the moment? I know the applications just closed a couple of weeks ago, but people who are sort of thinking that the NFTS might be for them.
Yeah, I think one of the things I would say is not letting the fees put you off, because I know that the school, I know there are many scholarships available, and the school will, you know, do whatever they can to help you. You know, once you're in, they'll support you. So I would say have the confidence to apply. And then I would also say, and again, I think it's about individuality and identity, I think. So they're not really looking for, I would say they're not looking for the most experienced director. You don't have to be, you know, you don't have to know the craft inside out. That's what you'd be coming there to learn. But it's about, again, coming back to knowing what you want to say, what kind of stories you want to say. So I would focus on that. Yeah.
Fab. So you mentioned obviously your graduation film, which is coming up in a few months, but what else is next for you? Do you have anything on the horizon, maybe longer term, or any kind of future plans?
So I've begun talking to agents, and hopefully I'll be signing with one quite soon, and then
fantastic. Congratulations. It's great.
So hopefully they'll kind of know what to do with my career. I don't do music videos and commercials, actually, which quite a few of my director friends do. I know you can make, you know, a career out of that, or at least, you know, pay rent with that. But that's not something I've done. I'd be open to trying commercials, definitely. I'm also open to TV, actually, just because I think the format allows, you know, it's so rich in terms of exploring relationships and those kind of dynamics. And I'd be intrigued to see what I could do. Apart from that, I am starting to write my first feature.
Very exciting.
Which, thank you, which I'm hoping. So the grad film is kind of set in the same world. So as soon as the grad is done, I would basically begin writing that properly and move on to looking what I can do in terms of first features. It always feels terrifying. You never feel ready, I think.
Fab. So final question for you, Miriam. What are a couple of your favourite films, and how do you think they've inspired both yourself and the projects that you've worked on?
I always hate this question just because my taste is so varied. I mean, I've grown up like watching French New Wave and Bollywood. Some of my favourite filmmakers, I would say, are Michael Haneke, Bergman, and... oh, God, I did like Jean-Luc Godard. I think he's gone a bit loopy now. But I think, oh, God, my taste is so varied. I don't know. It's been on my list to do this, to, like, make an actual list. One of my favorite films is a French film called La Haine, which is a black and white film that came out in 95. And it has nothing to do with, like, the kind of films I want to make. But it's so visceral and timeless and incredible.
No, it's a fantastic film.
So I think that's always stuck out as one of my absolute favorites. Yeah.
My parents got to see that film with Asian Dub Foundation doing the soundtrack live. It sounds like that was the best, like the most incredible experience.
That sounds amazing. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Very jealous of that.
You know what? I mean, because I go to film festivals as well just to watch films, even if I don't have one in. And one of my favorites has been like Sarajevo, and I've seen so many incredible films there. But short films as well. Actually, that would be another piece of advice, is to like watch short films, because you do end up learning so much more. And I think short films are you could say it's a completely different format. Yeah. And you do learn quite a bit about the structure and what works plot wise with short films. So I would recommend people to go out and watch shorts if they can, especially because you can find them so easily online. Favorite films. I mean, obviously everyone will cite Bicycle Thieves because it's also a timeless classic. I love the elegance of the way this tragedy is told. There's no melodrama, and yet I always end up in complete tears at the end of it. And another director I'm really, really fascinated by is Andrei Zviadintsev. He's a Russian director who last year released Loveless, which I don't know if you've seen, but
it's on my list.
Yeah, it's incredible, and all his early work is absolutely, absolutely incredible. But there's something about Russian filmmakers, I think, anyway, which the depression of it really speaks to me, I think. But
well, thank you, Miriam. Thank you for taking the time to talk with me.
Thank you.
I will put a link to some of your short films in the description down below. So if you haven't seen any of Miriam's work, I do suggest that you take a look. Thanks, Miriam. Take care.
Thank you so much.
And there we have it. I do hope you enjoyed my interview with Miriam. Do check back in a couple of weeks, where I'll be talking with Ben Malaby, who is a comedy director and has recently released a short film called Elderflower. We talk a little bit about working in comedy and working with stand-up comics as writers and lead performers. It's a great interview, so do check back then. Thanks very much. Take care.